The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Mark Borovitz, head of the Beit Shuva Addiction Recovery Program in California and author of the new book, Holy Thief, A Con Man's Journey from Darkness to Light. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill, and our expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and a new contributor on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reform Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reform congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom! The Jewish holidays are coming up, which seems shockingly early if you are used to Rosh Hashanah arriving mid or late September. But this year, as we used to say in my family, September comes late, and that means September 8th and 9th are Rosh Hashanah, and September 10th, too, if you're Orthodox or conservative. And that begins a veritable cornucopia of Jewish fall festivals, an avalanche of holiday abundance, a near orgy of observance. We have lots of Jewish holidays all year. In fact, the one month we don't have any special days is called Mar Cheshvan, the bitter month. But September this year is absolutely absurdly packed with Jewish festivals, both serious and joyous. Rosh Hashanah is followed a little more than a week later by Yom Kippur on September 17th and 18th, which is followed 4 days later by the more than a week-long celebration of Sukkot, which concludes with Shmini Atzeret on its last day, a kind of extra holiday appended to the long festival, and then finally the concluding joy of Simchat Torah. It is Festival Freefall, a huge series of holiday happenings, a time when the unusual celebration becomes typical. As comedian Henny Youngman once said, "I wanted to become an atheist, but I gave up. They have no holidays." Now, while all the holidays are important, it is Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur that bring out the largest crowds. My own Temple Emmanuel here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, is pretty typical. While on a normal Shabbat we'll attract as many as 300 or 400 people to various services, sometimes 500, on the high holy days we serve closer to 2,000 people, or maybe even 2,300 for services. Our sanctuary, which seats about 500 folks ordinarily, is expanded to 1,200, and we need two services at times, not counting the additional 300 people at our family services, or those who come to the Tot services, or Tashlich events, or, well, you get the idea. Lots more folks come out of the woodwork during the High Holy Days than the rest of the year. When I think of the number of people who attend High Holiday services and the constant efforts we rabbis make to bring them back at other times, I'm reminded of a story about a bar mitzvah. At a certain synagogue, there was a young man preparing for bar mitzvah who was known for his, lack of religious motivation. As might be expected, the rabbi of the congregation was not about to let this go unnoticed. The boy did his bar mitzvah and rose to the occasion as well as he could, with the minimal preparations he had done. It wasn't impressive, but it was nearly over. So it came time at the end to hand out the gifts the boy receives, the usual Kiddush cup, prayer book, and Bible from the congregation and the sisterhood and such. And then the rabbi added a special gift. He said, "You have received many gifts today, many treasures of Judaism in book form that will enrich your life and make it holy in the eyes of God. And now, my own special gift to you." With that, he pulled out an umbrella from behind his podium and told the boy, "I present you this umbrella because I want to give you a gift at least I know you will open." Well, I think that most American Jews are rather like that bar mitzvah boy, and Judaism is the prayer book and Bible we don't open all year. Ah, but the High Holy Days is the umbrella. Most of the year, a majority of Jews don't open the Bible or pray from a prayer book at all. But on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, fortunately, most of them remember to come back and reopen the books. It's up to us rabbis and cantors to make that experience meaningful enough that they'll open it up again much sooner than a year from now. No pressure, Rabbi. Just change my life for the better over the next 10 days, or I may not come back. Ah, well, every job has its challenges, no? So to play us in and get us into a high holy day mood, Slichot is coming up this very Saturday night, the pre-holiday to begin this phenomenal holiday season. Here's Max Janowski's classic Avinu Malkeinu, this version from the CD Yamim Noraim, Days of Awe music from Transcontinental Publishing. That Avinu Malkeinu setting for the prayer that portrays God as our Father and King is one of the more beautiful musical pieces used through the High Holy Days, especially in Reform and Conservative congregations. Barbara Streisand once recorded a version of it on an album, by the way, and although she certainly sings pretty well, I must note that the piece you just heard lasted about 2.5 minutes. For the same short text, La Streisand took 10 minutes to emote her way through Avinu Malkeinu. Okay, when I looked it up, she actually took about 4 minutes. Still, for those of us engaged in actually performing synagogue music and knowing the lack of patience of the modern High Holy Day congregation, it felt like 10 minutes. And Streisand only occasionally screamed like Ethel Merman on the high notes. Well, as we will demonstrate in a couple of weeks, at least Streisand's Avinu Malkeinu was way better than Johnny Mathis's version of Kol Nidre. Avinu Malkeinu is a much better song than The Way We Were or Evergreen in any case, and certainly more appropriate for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which are coming up very, very soon. Rosh Hashanah is a week from Wednesday night and Thursday, and Yom Kippur about 10 days after. Our guest this morning, Rabbi Mark Borowitz, knows a great deal about the subjects of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, repentance and atonement. Mark Borowitz began as a serial thief, an addict, and a convicted criminal. Learn what brought him back from the brink and led him to an amazing place when we come back on Too Jewish.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism celebrates its 10th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in new locations. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment's easy. Just call 520-327-4501. Taste of Judaism is an exciting learning opportunity for anyone curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free, but you do need to pre-enroll by calling 327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, while introducing the new Taste of Judaism family class held at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with the rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. Call Mila Anderson at 520-327-4501.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft, and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You know, lots of people complain that living in Tucson in the summer is hard, but I beg to differ. I think living in Tucson in the summer is easy. For example, we've got about a third less traffic. We've got swimming pools everywhere. And of course, we got 4 Mama's locations that are easy to get to. You know, it's totally easy to see why Mama's is one of Tucson's favorite summer spots. First, our restaurants are real easy on the eyes. Plus, they're climate controlled, so it's easy to be comfortable. Not too hot and not too cold. Plus, it's easy to feel confident that our food is among the best in town because Mama's uses the freshest ingredients in everything we make. Yep, it's easy to see why Mama's and summer get along so well. In fact, the only thing that's not easy is deciding if you want a pizza or calzone. Mama's Pizza with 4 Tucson locations. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Mark Boromitz. Mark is the senior rabbi and spiritual leader of the Beit Shuva Recovery Program and Congregation Beit Shuva. His personal spiritual journey and rabbinic education are a unique and valuable experience to learn about. He recently published his memoir, The Holy Thief, co-written with Alan Eisenstock, chronicling his journey from con man to rabbi and community leader. About 6 years ago, Mark was one of 7 people invited to a roundtable discussion with then-President George W. Bush about faith and recovery. He's mentioned in President Bush's speech in those days before the first conference on faith-based initiatives. Mark's a graduate of the National University with a Bachelor of Arts in Behavioral Science, received a Master's in Rabbinic Literature, and was ordained a rabbi from the University of Judaism in L.A. He has received numerous awards. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, your journey, which I'm familiar with having grown up in L.A., includes your own experience of addiction and recovery. Tell us a little bit about how it all started.
Well, it started actually when I was about 15. What I first became addicted to was being a criminal. And really, you know, what we call here macherism, you know, trying to be a big shot. And I started hustling hot merchandise that I would get on consignment from some organized crime people in Cleveland, Ohio. And that led to being part of a life, and part of the life was alcohol. So I also became an alcoholic because whatever I've done with all of myself. And so it led to years of both drinking and doing criminal behaviors, which are talked about in the book.
But what it really was it was a life that was empty, and I was lost and alone, and I felt like I had nobody that really understood my soul, or really got who I am, and that really is what I was addicted to. I was addicted to being sort of being miserable and lost, and I didn't want any help, and I wouldn't take help also. You know, even when it was offered to me.
And what began your journey back? I know you were an inmate at the prison in Chico, working as a clerk for a rabbi there. Tell us a little bit about what started the change.
Right. Well, in Chino, it was in Chino, California.
Oh, Chino, I'm sorry.
And what happened before that was I was arrested on a fluke. I was walking across the street, and a police officer, Detective Jim Bashira, who had arrested me in 1981, and this was January of 81, this was December of 86, almost 6 years later, remembered he'd seen a wanted poster on me from Santa Barbara County, and in the time it took to turn a corner, he put all of that together. So I was talking to my brother, I was talking to my first wife, and she said, "What bondsman do you want me to call?" And I said, "Don't call anybody. The man upstairs is trying to tell me something, and I have to sit here until I can figure it out." And that really was the start of this journey back. And then I was blessed to study with Rabbi Mel Silverman, who was the prison rabbi in California, at the California Institution for Men. And the rest, as they say, is history. And I kept going and came to work at Beit Shuva, and I've made a very good life with God's help and the help of a lot of people.
We will hear a great deal more about that journey and that life. It's a fascinating story, and Beit Shuva and recovery in general, from Rabbi Mark Borowitz when we continue this morning on Too Jewish.
If your parents or other loved ones are in need of assisted living, consider making the choice that Dorothy Daniels' family made, Handmaker.
Living at Handmaker does make me feel very independent, like I was still in my house. The best part of it is I don't have to clean it.
Assisted living at Handmaker promotes an active and independent life. All needs are met, including weekly housekeeping and linen service, transportation to doctor's appointments, restaurants, banks, and shopping. And living at Handmaker is fun.
Every 2 weeks, there is a man who comes with a saxophone, and we dance, and I love that because I love to dance.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes 1 and 2 bedroom suites and cozy studios with patios and balconies.
I would recommend Handmaker to anyone because I feel very safe and secure here. The people that work here are very nice, considerate, and that means a lot.
For a tour and consultation, call 322-7035 or visit their website at handmaker.org.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Sam Kohan of Temple Emmanuel. Tucson has the greatest lightning storms in the world. Out of the blackest night, shimmering bolts of brilliance slash across the sky. Give us a glimpse of what lies beyond our grasp. We see for a moment, and then it's gone. But sometimes that flash of brilliance is followed by another and another, and we really see what's out there all the way to the horizon. The greatest Jewish thinker, Moses Maimonides, thought learning was like lightning. At first, it simply scatters the darkness. But when you stick with it, when you stay the course, it lights the great lamp of knowledge and understanding. Come ignite your own fire of Jewish learning and your children's here in our exceptional education program at Temple Emmanuel. Call 325-4888 for Temple Emmanuel, preschool, religious school, adult education academy, Jewish learning for life. Temple Emmanuel, 325-4888. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows by contacting us through the website or downloading us from twojewishradio.com or at the Apple iTunes Store as popular Jewish podcasts. We are now pleased and serene to revive an occasionally recurring feature of Too Jewish, Zen Judaism. For you, a little enlightenment for this season of reconciliation and return. Let go of pride, ego, and opinion. Admit your errors. Forgive those of others. Relinquishment will lead to calm and healing in relationships. If that doesn't work, try small claims court. That was a koan of Zen Judaism. We welcome a brand new contributor to Two Jewish, our Israel Shliach in my community here in Tucson, Guy Gelbart, who has arrived in Tucson and in America just a week ago from Israel. How does it feel to be in America?
Well, I'm very excited. We had an amazing and touching welcome when we got here. The people here in Tucson are just amazing, all of them. And we're excited to be here and to bring Israel with us.
Tell me a little bit, tell our listeners a little bit about where you're from, about your family, and what it's like as an Israeli to kind of uproot everybody and come here.
My name is Guy, as you said. I was born in Haifa, in the northern part of Israel.
My favorite city in Israel, by the way.
That's a great city.
Except maybe for Jerusalem, but still Haifa's pretty good.
I come from the high-tech industry. I've been working in an Intel in Israel as a software project leader. And prior to that, I had kind of experience with a startup in Israel. And I've been very involved in community life in Israel after working hours and stuff.
So people here probably aren't as aware as people in Israel that pretty much everybody that goes on to business has first served in the army and then done some education. How long were you in the army? Tell us a little bit about your service.
I'm a captain in the Israeli army. I've served as an intelligence field, as a field intelligence officer. I'm still serving on reserve duty. I'm not sure that I'm allowed to tell anything prior than that, but...
Okay. Well, we won't tell anybody, you know, everybody out there listening in the radio, please, you know, raise up your hand and swear with me you won't convey any of Guy's secrets to the rest of the world.
Okay, and I've been seeing a lot of stuff around, being to the north, being on the Lebanon border and across sometimes, and on the Gaza Strip, seeing a lot of stuff. But I must point out that being part of the IDF, I can tell you with the whole guarantee that the IDF keeps moral values as its highest priority wherever we do. And our first goal is to protect the citizens of Israel and the Jewish people.
You've just relocated to America, so you're really fresh off the boat, as it were, or the airplane in this case. Just one quick observation about the difference between Israel and America.
Well, I think the thing that you see straight away is the way people schedule things. In the United States, people tend to schedule things much more in advance, while in Israel, they do it ad hoc. Okay.
Boy, do they ever. Well... We'll have a chance to hear much more from you about Israel and your observations about America as Israeli when we talk to you next week. Thank you, Guy.
Thank you. And I would like also, if people schedule in advance, to give people a date to mark their calendars. The 3rd of November, we'll have an amazing Israeli ethnic cooking gala here in Tucson. So come wherever you are, come to Tucson and join our gala.
And save your appetites. Thanks, Guy.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, from Two Jewish Storyteller Jordan Hill, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Weidler of Janos Restaurant in the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So what's going on this summer at Janos and the J-Bar?
We've got so much going on, it's hard for me to keep it all straight, but I'm going to try. We've got our summer music series that you know about. We have our summer passports where you dine, and the more times you dine, you collect stamps for free dinners at Janos or J-Bar. Our Janos summer samplers at $19.95, our J-Bar summer samplers at $12.95. At Janos, our 10 terrific taste menu, four courses, 12 different items for $50, drink specials, wine specials. Summer's our time.
I'm starving.
Well, come on over, Rabbi.
What's the phone number for Janos and the J-Bar?
615-6100.
And the website?
www.janos.com. We've got all our menus up. We've got the summer music schedule up.
And don't forget all the great samplers. We will see you at Janos and the J-Bar, J-A-N-O-S.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Last couple of weeks, we talked about the Jews in Argentina, a very interesting Latin American Jewish community. Let's go a little more broadly and talk about the Jews all over Latin America. You know, some of these are very ancient communities. There have been Jews on the islands and then in Mexico, for example, from early in the 16th century, long time for this hemisphere. Interesting Jewish communities. Some started Sephardic, added Ashkenazi, added people before the World War II, after, and so on. Let's do a little survey.
Okay. Also, to those very old communities, you might add a couple of communities in northeastern Brazil, like Recife
the first those one, places. Right?
Those are among the oldest Jewish presences in the Western Hemisphere.
I think even some of the island places, Curacao and
right.
such.
Right. Well, obviously, the places that belonged to either England or Holland first were, or at least tended to be, more hospitable to Jewish settlers than the places that belonged to Spain, Portugal, or France because of the Inquisition and Catholicism's attitude towards Jews versus Protestantism's attitude towards Jews in the 16th, 17th, 18th century when Europe was riven by religious wars. And one of the things that they carried over with them to the New World was religious hostility, but also different attitudes towards Jews. That being said, you know, the community that is most like the Argentinian community is probably the community in Chile, which is important and prosperous and well-established. The Brazilian Jewish community has its own history. It's much more Sephardic, as opposed to the Ashkenazim pretty much everywhere else on the mainland of South America. And then as you get into the Caribbean, whether you're talking about the islands or even places like Panama and Costa Rica, you have Jewish communities that are mixed. You have even Jewish communities that are divided between Syrian Jews from Damascus and Syrian Jews from Aleppo. Never mind Syrian Jews and Jews from elsewhere in the Ottoman Empire, which is also very interesting. I mean, their own social clubs, their own synagogues, even their own schools in some cases. And then in tiny places where the whole Jewish community may number 2,000 or 3,000, including Sephardim, Ashkenazim, Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, everybody else, you still have, like you have in the southern U.S., little Jewish communities everywhere and little remnants, some of which seem to have a brighter future than others, but nonetheless significant Jewish presences scattered throughout Mexico, the Caribbean, Central America, and the South American continent. So looking closely at any one of these places, you get a slightly different aspect of the same story, but overall I think it really is the same story.
Yeah. You know, I remember when I was 14 years old, went to Mexico City with my family, not really knowing anything about Mexico except, you know, Tijuana or something, and a big, impressive, remarkable city, and went out to the Jewish community center and realized it was like a glorious country club. I'd never seen anything like that that was like a Jewish entity in my life. Those Jewish communities are not necessarily impoverished and not necessarily repressed these days.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your bubbians 80 knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Why is it so important for the groom at a Jewish wedding to stomp on a wine glass? Because it's the last time he'll be able to put his foot down. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. We welcome our Too Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Rabbi. To help us start getting ready for the upcoming high holidays in the next few weeks, I have this story. There was once a soldier who was fascinated with the ideas of heaven and hell, and he wanted more than anything else to understand their secrets. And he had heard that there was this wise old rabbi, a tzaddik, a righteous sage, who would surely know such things, and so the soldier decided to pay him a visit. And being a soldier, somewhat aggressive and brash, and being rather high-ranking in the army and somewhat full of himself, he burst into this rabbi's home one day, and he looked at him haughtily and said, "Rabbi, I want to know, what is the gateway to heaven? What is the gateway to hell?" And the rabbi stood up, and he started berating the soldier, saying, "You good-for-nothing piece of meat, da-da-da-da." And he just kept on going as the color rose in the soldier's face. I mean, never before had he been spoken to in this way. And he was so infuriated, he didn't know what else to do other than what he was trained to do. And he reached for his sword, drew it from his sheath, started coming at the rabbi, when the rabbi stopped and looked at him calmly without flinching and said, "That is the gateway to hell." And when the soldier realized that the rabbi had risked his life to teach him this, he was struck. He dropped his sword, he dropped to his knees, and with tears in his eyes, he started thanking the rabbi. And the rabbi looked down, and he smiled lovingly, and he said, "And that is the gateway to heaven."
Thanks, Jordan, for that entirely appropriate story in this season of return, repentance, and journeying towards heaven. And now a word of Torah. This week we're celebrating the final Shabbat of the year, which means that our Torah portion is one of the great sections of the whole year, Nitzavim Vayelech. You stand here today, all of you, oldest to youngest, from the wealthiest to the poorest, the most famous to the humblest, the leaders of your community and the strangers visiting with you. You are all part of the covenant with the Lord your God, you and every other generation to come who will be descended from you. This great brit, this covenant, affirms that you will be God's people and God will be your Lord. The universal covenant affirms that we are part of a profound and eternal tradition, a connection to our ancestors that will be carried forward to our descendants, each of us. All of us are part of this remarkable compact. It's an extraordinarily democratic and egalitarian agreement with God, a brit that's shared with everyone, regardless of gender or age. Children and women stand with men here, not always the case at the time of the Torah, even today. It's a very special agreement, a covenant. But what's the content of the commandment, the mitzvah, that we are to observe? At the climax of our Torah portions, we are told, "Ki ha-mitzvah hazot asher anochi mitzavcha hayom lo niflet hi mimcha." Look, this commandment that I command you today is not too awesome for you. It's not beyond your reach. It's not in the heavens that you should say, "Who among us can go up there to take it and teach it to us so that we may do it?" It's not across the sea that you should say, "Who among us can cross over and bring it back to us to do it?" No, it's very close to you, already in your mouth and your heart. As Rabbi Larry Kushner says, the Torah isn't somewhere else. It's in us. We're made of it. The Torah is coded into our protoplasm, our DNA. That's why it feels good to live by the Torah, the way of all being. We're just doing what we've been designed for from the beginning. Perhaps the mitzvah, the commandment that Nitzavim speaks about, is no more than becoming aware of the presence of Torah in our midst, or more precisely, of the presence of God here and now. In this season, when we prepare our tshuva, our return and repentance, God is here right now. Tshuva becomes a way of being aware that Torah is already in our mouths and hearts. This may be the mother of all the mitzvot, as Kushner said, of all commandments, for all other commandments are merely human refractions of this one mitzvah, the awareness of God's presence. And then tshuva simply means God says, "Return to me. Become aware of me always being in your life." A great thing to remember as we approach Rosh Hashanah, and always. Don't forget, join us for Slichot this Saturday night at 8 p.m. if you're in southern Arizona, as we discuss Life is Hard and Then You Atone with the film A Serious Man, study session, discussion, Havdalah, dessert, and the gorgeous Slichot services. Well, when we come back this morning on Two Jewish, Rabbi Mark Borowitz will continue his remarkable story, just what can bring a thief and addict from the penitentiary to ordination? Find out when we return on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In news that is not really new, the Palestinians will withdraw from peace talks with Israel if construction in the West Bank settlements resumes, Mahmoud Abbas told the Mideast Quartet. By the way, the Mideast Quartet is not a string group, but, well, you'll hear. In a letter delivered last week to representatives of the United States, Russia, the United Nations, and the European Union, the Quartet, which guides the phantom Middle East peace process, the Palestinian Authority, President Abbas, said that if the settlement building freeze ends as scheduled on September 26th, about a month from now, the Palestinian Authority will withdraw from the direct peace talks scheduled to be started September 2nd in Washington. Abbas called on the Quartet to follow previous resolutions dealing with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, including the 1991 Madrid Peace Conference, the 2002 Roadmap, and the Arab Peace Initiative, all of which call for an end to settlement construction. But Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told Likud party ministers last week the freeze will end as scheduled. Meanwhile, Hamas canceled reconciliation talks with Abbas's Fatah party last week due to the announcement of direct negotiations that Fatah was having with Israel. The groups have remained split since Hamas's brutal takeover of the Gaza Strip, in which they expelled Hamas back in June of 2007. Our News of the Weird department reports that a New Jersey couple who gave Nazi names to their three children will not regain custody of them. The family drew attention when a ShopRite supermarket in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, refused to decorate a birthday cake addressed to their son, Adolf Hitler Campbell. The couple also have daughters with names that include Aryan Nation Campbell and Himmler Jeannie Campbell. The children, who are apparently endangered by their parents, according to the state, who have multiple untreated physical and psychological disabilities, the children were put into foster care. Weird story indeed. I wish those children the best of luck with those names and those parents. And in our even weirder news department, new DNA evidence gathered from relatives of Adolf Hitler seemed to indicate that he was descended not from perfect Aryans, but from Jews and North Africans. Hitler, of course, was a pale Austrian brunette who rose to prominence, propagandizing the global supremacy of Gentile Germans with blonde hair and blue eyes. His hyperventilating venom drove Germany into World War II and all of us into the Holocaust, and resulted in the once powerful nation converting itself into a pile of rocks and dead bodies. Anyway, even in Hitler's time, there were rumors about his hypocrisy in hating Jews, with lots of stories about a Jewish grandfather. But it wasn't until molecular biology caught up with him that the world could see the truth. In the Belgian magazine Knack, journalist Jean-Paul Mulders and historian Mark Vermeeren tracked down 39 living relatives of Hitler and took saliva samples, which were then genetically sequenced and analyzed. The big discovery in Hitler's DNA was the chromosome haplogroup E1B1B in the Y DNA, which is rarely found in the Western Europeans Hitler idolized. That chromosome is typically found in North African peoples of Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and Libya, as well as in most Ashkenazic and Sephardic Jews. Correlation does not equal causation. There's no concrete evidence yet that Hitler was descended from Jews from, say, Casablanca, but it surely chips away at another brick in that weird Aryan facade, putting him and his intellectually bankrupt racial theories in an appropriate molecular biology place in history. And in sad but oddly predictable news, the only secular Yiddish bookstore in New York is losing its home on East 21st Street. That was the one spot, maybe in the world, where among the huddled, dusty shelves you could schmooze about Shalom Aleichem and Isaac Bashevis Singer with a salesman who spoke the language. Naturally, the store has been selling its 55,000 books, new and used, from a space that isn't really attractive. It's actually the third floor of an office building. That shop bears the decidedly uncatchy name of the nonprofit Central Yiddish Cultural Organization. The location and brand name did not exactly entice impulse shoppers to breeze by. In fact, founded in 1937, the Yiddish language store was open only by appointment on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, sometimes hinging on whether the director, a guy named Hi Wolf, had his regular basketball game at the local Y. Still, in the three rooms of double-stacked shelves, it has Yiddish gems like a three-volume set of The Origin of the Species by Darwin, stories by Guy de Maupassant, the 28-volume collection of Shalom Aleichem, and a private library of the actor Yosef Weissman, who was Dr. No in the first James Bond film. Bet you didn't know that. There are also many books that the organization published on its own, including novels by Isaac Bashevis Singer and Chaim Grad. If we published 250 copies, Mr. Wolf has said, that was a bestseller. Well, the old joke is that Yiddish is an ever-dying language, but it remains not quite true. Yiddish continues to flourish as a spoken vernacular for many Orthodox Hasidic Jews, but the number of Yiddish speakers and readers who are not ultra-Orthodox and who can appreciate the astonishing richness and vitality of secular Yiddish culture and books has declined dramatically. Oy veiz mir. And the closing of this New York institution may signal yet another nail in its literary coffin. Or, as Shalom Aleichem would say, on the other hand, maybe not. And that's the news of Jews round the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Mark Borowitz, the rabbi and spiritual leader of the Beit Shuva Recovery Program in Los Angeles and Congregation Beit Shuva. Mark, you told us a little bit about your background, as you noted, sort of addicted to being a criminal, alcohol, arrested and sent to the California State Prison in Chino. And you decided to go and not fight it because you thought there was something you really needed to learn. You began to study with Rabbi Mel Silverman. Tell us a little bit more about the course of recovery for you and how that translates to others.
Well, the course of recovery for me is how to live life as a decent human being, wrestling with all of my demons and the parts of me that are great and the parts of me that aren't so fancy still. Sort of like the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov, and the classic wrestling match of Jacob in Torah. So it's a constant learning that I have to keep doing. I have to learn more about myself, and learn more about others, and learn new and better ways to understand text, so I understand my life better, and how to live it better. And it started with Rabbi Silverman, and it continued with Rabbi Jonathan Omerman, and it continues today with Rabbi Ed Feinstein. But it really is about, I saw that I could live as a decent human being, and I saw that tshuva was not only possible, but it was mandatory. See, I bought the lie that a leper doesn't change its spots, and you have to be perfect. And once we started studying Judaism, and I studied Hilchot Tshuva, the laws of Tshuva, with Rabbi Silverman from Maimonides, from the Rambam. And what happened was I realized that it was all a smoke and mirrors, this perfection. And that really the job was to keep growing and doing one grain of sand more and better each day, and also keep looking at oneself and seeing where you missed the mark and where you hit it, and to stop being afraid of being wrong, because all of us are going to be wrong. And rather than be shamed by it, say, wow, it gives me a chance to learn something. And that's really what we do at Beit Shuva, and that's really what's changed my life.
So not being perfect is the beginning of wisdom?
Yes.
When you meet an addict for the first time at Beit Shuva, when someone comes in, how do you get to the truth with them?
I'm not sure I do at first. I know that at first I can relate to the person, and we can laugh about the lies. I don't always get to the truth, but I certainly can hear the lies. And that comes from really listening to somebody and watching them and being involved in that moment with that person. And that's the other thing is that we don't really listen to people anymore. One of the reasons is we start to have a response for something before the other person is even done talking. And so we drift away. And we're talking at each other much more than we're talking with each other. So what I do is I make sure that the person knows that I'm here to talk with them. And I don't want to go in for the old way of doing things. And from that, usually the story comes out. And I listen and I ask questions based on what they're saying, not on a set of questions that I have. So I do everything as much in the moment as possible.
You know, some of the best Jewish 12-step work has been done by people who are not themselves addicts, which almost goes against the grain of how people think about recovery. Do you think it's a strange question, I suppose, but do you think that you went through the lies, the addictions, for a purpose so that you could help others?
Well, here's the thing. Okay, I didn't have to go through everything I went through in order to help others.
Right.
And I don't subscribe to the idea that God must have wanted me to do all these things so that I could end up here. Right. Because I don't believe that God ever wants me to hurt anybody, and I hurt a tremendous amount of people. I devastated my family, my daughter, my mother, my brother, my sister, and you know, that's not something that was necessary. And I can't go along with that, even though people try and help me, they try and defend me or you know, play it off like that. I can't do that. I don't buy into it. What I believe is that I've taken what happened and I've turned it into the best life lessons I can. And that is, I think, really what Tshuva is about. I think that that's what recovery is about. It's about taking life lessons and turning it into the best the best prescription for the future and how to do things.
You wrote a book, which has a great title, The Holy Thief, about your own journey from con man to rabbi. Was it difficult writing a book? How different was it for you than the work that you do on a daily basis?
Well, it was difficult. Actually, it got easier as the process went along. What was difficult was reliving it all.
They say so does crucifixion, but you know the process itself can be painful.
Yeah, it was very painful in that I had to again relive all of those things, and I had to look at myself, my actions, and my writing partner, Alan Eisenstock, he's just tremendous, and he didn't let anything go. So if I wanted to slough something off, he delved into it more. So it was a real, it was another cheshbon and nefesh for me. It was another accounting inventory for me, and it was really, really powerful because I saw things and realized things and had conversations with people that I hadn't avoided but just hadn't even thought of having, and or they with me. And so it was very interesting.
You know, we're in the period of Elul, heading for Rosh Hashanah, the period of Tshuva. So maybe this is too easy a question, but what Jewish texts are most important to you in working with others on recovery and your own recovery?
What Jewish texts? Oh, they're all important. But I mean, I do Hilchot Tshuva, and I also have my own take on Tshuva. You know, there's something that I've written up. For residents here, we call it the High Holiday Repair Kit, where people take a look at themselves through the Oshamnu prayer. And they look at the excuses that they've made and how they're still hiding behind old excuses. And anything of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, because Rabbi Heschel makes us look at ourselves very, very powerfully, especially the last third of God in Search of Man. And I use Rabbi Steinsaltz's 13-Petaled Rose, the chapter on repentance, I think is
beautiful.
Amazing. And the whole idea of severing myself from that old person. Not that it didn't exist, but it's just not who I am anymore. And having a real cutoff from that person instead of always being haunted by him. And so those are the texts that I use. You know, if any of your listeners want what I've done for the High Holiday Repair Kit, they can contact us here at Beit Tshuva.
And we should give that website to
www.beittshuvah.org.
Mark, if someone who's listening here in Southern Arizona, throughout the state of Arizona, by podcast, has someone in their family who has addiction problems, and they're Jewish, or they watch Jewish Insight, what do you recommend?
Call me.
And the number, best number to call would be?
310-204-5200, and it's extension 211. And if I'm not here, my cell phone is listed on it. Because whatever we can do to help, that's what we're here for.
I'm going to ask a kind of a wider question. How many people's lives are affected by addiction?
Well, I just saw something that said that there's 32 million adults people over the age of 15 who are abusing and or addicted to drugs and alcohol. That's not including gambling and everything else. And when you take a look and you figure in the family factor of 2.3 people per family, you're talking about, you know, 60, 70 million people. And then the rest of us that are affected because our friends are affected or some other family member is affected or an in-law, you know, all of these different things. I think we're looking at a vast, vast number.
So if people want to find help, first of all, they can read your book, The Holy Thief by Rabbi Mark Borowitz, which is available every place books are available. They can call you 310-204-5200, extension 211, or contact beittshuvah.org, beittshuvah.org. Mark, thank you for a great visit, and l'shana tova tikatevu v'techa temu.
Thank you so much. Todah rabah. I'm so honored to be here. And please, anytime or anything we can do, okay? It should be a sweet, sweet year for you.
Thank you.
Be well.
Be well. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest. Get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in Southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Sam Kohan of Temple Emmanuel. There's a great story about a guy whose mother gives him two ties for his birthday, a red one and a blue one. He doesn't much like either one, but to please her, as he dresses for dinner, he puts on the red tie and comes downstairs. His mother takes one look at him and says, "So, what's the matter? You don't like the blue one?" So many times in life, we're not satisfied. We're just not getting what we want. Judaism helps teach us how we can find what we need in the world from our God and from those we love. Come to Temple Emmanuel. We'll help. Call 325-4888. Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson, preschool, religious school, adult education academy. Call 325-4888. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Yehuda Reinhartz, the president of Brandeis University. Our playout this morning comes from the Western Winds for the coming High Holy Day season, Hayom Tamtzenu, today. Remember us for life. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.